When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast at SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers, Madison Firefighters Local 311, and Madison Teachers Incorporated, as well as Madison Teamsters Local 695. Joining us now, Madison School Board member Nikki Vandermeulen. Nikki, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sly, for having me on the air.
All right, you brought something to my attention last night that seems to be exploding on Facebook. Tell me what's going on.
Hi. We have a Board of Education has a set of rules that guard our work, including information rule 1000. One of those policies is policy Board of Education 1515. It involves how we get information so that we can make an informed vote. They'd want to change 1515 so that instead of any board member being allowed to have any form of information regarding the vote, the board president under this new policy would be allowed to deny or alter any requests for information.
So when you say they, and that is frightening, when you say they, who do you mean?
I mean the Board of Education President James Howard has the right under the board policy, under this new policy, we were not given a who requested the change. Under the new board policy, it would be that James Howard could deny or request or alter any request for information if he did not feel like filling it. And he does not have to give a reason.
Now, this has to be voted on, correct?
Correct, but it was buried in the packet. And the majority of people, it's not exactly, it's number three and it's kind of hidden.
So we're recording this Monday morning. You have a meeting tonight?
Yes.
Okay.
I know it's last minute. The board gets information on Thursday before a meeting. The public doesn't get it till Friday. Sometimes we don't even get contracts till 2 days before. I know that the Board of Education and I know the administration does its best. It's just there's a large amount of information, and we understand that. What I'm afraid is the optics of this, that it looks like we're hiding something, and that's not the board I know. That's not the people I know, and I don't want that to be seen as a way of withholding information.
Well, when somebody introduces a change in board policy, don't they have to author it?
Normally, you would see an author of it. In this, in the packet with the cross. Normally, they're either a cross-out or an addition, and normally we find out who. We did not find out who in this case.
All right. As other board members discuss this, do you have to be careful about open meetings laws in discussing this with other board members?
Yes, we cannot have. That's why we could only talk in the board email for all of us, or like you can't have what's called a negative quorum, which is more than three people at once discussing board information or even being in the same room at the same time. And although that's a great idea, and I understand it, it's important. Problem is that policies like this creep up, and then you can't really discuss it before at all. And people aren't going to know what's going on.
I already explained what fellow board member T.J. Mertz unearthed with an open records request.
Yes. T.J. has filed several open records requests, one of which was during the IMA or Montessori when we requested the second ideation, I'm sorry, I cannot pronounce that word to save my life, of the contract. And originally, we were told that the information was too large when he first requested it. Then he did a Freedom of Information Act, and then the entire board was given it. How do we vote if we don't know what we're voting on?
Right. So do you see this as a systemic problem that's developing, or are these a couple cases that are isolated? You've been on the board a year now, right?
I'm hoping it's isolated. I'm afraid it's not. And I want it to be isolated. Our board is a way of providing information, and it provides information to the public. And if you look at the open records law, it says that it is the providing, in the preamble, it says, providing persons with such information is declared to be an essential function of a representative government and an integral part of the routine duties of officers and employees. So, additionally, it says that it should, the statute be construed at every instance with a presumption of complete public access, consistent with the conduct of governmental business. That means we have not only should see it, we have the right to see it. But if we continue on this path, we'd have to do a formal Freedom of Information Act request to be able to see the documents when we have to vote on them, if the president doesn't want to fill it.
Why do you think somebody has done this?
Honestly, I understand that what the reason is there's a large amount of information, and we don't always have the largest staff. And I understand that, but we already have information in place. If someone requests too much information, it can be brought up to the entire board at a meeting and explain why the entire request is too large to fill. So to have this policy on top of it seems like overkill. It seems like you're saying that the information should be limited, but we don't have to give you a reason why. The other issue that really scares me, Sly, is by allowing one person to control it. It says that one person is more important than the rest of the board. We're all elected equally, Sly. We should all have that right.
So let me ask you this. Do you think that TJ doing an open records request for what happened with the Montessori school, and we can get into that in a little more depth here in a few minutes, and some of the other open records requests that he's put forward, was the reason somebody introduced this? Do you think this is targeted at TJ?
I can't prove it's targeted, and I will never say it's targeted, but what I can say is it's awful coincidental, and I don't like that. I don't like coincidence. And for the attorney thing, we don't like saying, we just don't like it. We want to know why.
You sound a little bit like Michael Avenatti here.
A little bit.
I mean that as a compliment.
That's a high compliment.
I like
what
him.
What he's doing is excellent work, and the public has a right to know how their government works. We're already seeing at the federal level what happens when we don't. I don't want to see that at a local or state level.
Well, yeah, I mean, we see this all the time. It was one of the reasons I was so appalled by the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I hate to bring that up, but it was negotiated in secret, and people didn't get to see the details.
Exactly. How can you vote on things you don't know what the details are?
Right, and of course, we see this all the time. You're right. It is Washington, and the school board's not really supposed to operate like Washington, D.C.
No, definitely not. It's sad to say that we have a higher standard than D.C., but right now I believe we do.
Let me ask you about the school board. Is it a pretty cohesive unit? Are there different factions? Are people fighting?
We're not fighting. We have difference of opinions, but I want difference of opinion. And I think sometimes it's easier just for everyone to agree. And that's hard, because I want to hear the debate. I want to hear the discussion. That doesn't mean we're not a cohesive board if we debate. I think we're more cohesive when we debate and discuss, because we know what everyone's views are than just saying, okay, this is the information we vote. It passed. Let's get over it.
Let me ask you, if this passes, is it actually going to be voted on tonight? You said it was the third item?
It's on the agenda, the third item for discussion. It could be voted on either tonight or May 21st.
If this were to pass, would you challenge its legality?
Absolutely.
So this will not, if a vote is taken, and so what do? You sue?
What you first do is you request an administrative review, and you would do an administrative review. I'd rather not sue first. I'd rather speak with an administrative law judge, try and figure out the logistics of it, and to find out what our options are. Additionally, would like to speak to Wisconsin School Board Association and DPI. Then you move on. I don't want to have to move on. I trust our board makes the right decision on this, and I'm not trying to influence how people vote. I just want people to know what's going on their own board.
Can you discuss this with former school board members?
Yes, I can.
And what are you hearing from former school board members?
I talked to Marge Passman quite a bit on this, and I included, I have an email from her in which she actually has given me permission to share said email, and she stated how appalled that she was. I believe her words were, and I'm quoting from an email on Sunday, May 13th, 2018, set at 2:32 p.m., she said, I'm concerned
Nikki, it sounds like we're at a deposition.
Yeah. It's hard to turn the law off. It really is.
Oh, I'm just teasing you. Go ahead.
It says, quote, the board, it says, quotes policy first. The board president may deny or alter any request for information to the current policy, which already allows requests, which create an unusual burden to be brought to the attention of the entire board. And this is Marge speaking now. I am concerned about the change to board rules. No such power should be placed in anyone's hands, not in the superintendent's office, not in the board, certainly not in the board's president. The open and free communication of information between MMSD, the board, and the public is a sacred right not to be meddled with or restrained in any way. I understand that there has been board members and members of the public who have on occasion made excessive demands for information. In the past, the administration has met individually with these people and explained that the size of their request puts an excessive burden on staff. That has usually been enough. Asking for information and applying the district to something to hide are separate issues. If this change occurs, the sole implication, and by this she means optics because I asked her specifically, will be that the board and administration are attempting to act secrecy and so must be hiding something. The policy of MMSD must be open and available to all. And please vote against this change. Marjorie Passman, and then she lists her email.
And Bill Keyes sort of put it more succinctly. What the hell is going on?
Yes. Bill is good. And it's point blank, and I'd love him for it. I mean, what Arlene Severus stated on Facebook, it was wrong. These are our people.
Well, those are all people I like. Those are all people I like, for one thing.
Oh, very good. That always helps. So let's be 100% honest. We've got former board members saying, do you really want to do this? I even talked to Ben Peters the other day to get his information, and he was appalled by it. I mean, these are the kind of things. We don't want to restrict this kind of information. We're too good of a board. We're too good of a district to do that.
All right, let me stand by. We'll talk more with Nikki Vandermeulen from the Madison School Board at sliceoffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who's going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
We're back at sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers and great local sponsors like Jeff's Guitar Clinic and Fort Atkinson, Madison Computer Works, and the Axley Law Firm. So let me ask you a little bit about, you know, what's going on in the board in general. After serving for a year, what are you concerned about with the district? Obviously, there was a school board race where an incumbent was defeated, someone that you supported. So there's a change there. What's your overall feel after serving on the school board for a year?
I enjoy our board. We have our differences. We have our issues. And I think that's what makes us unique. Yes, the candidate I supported did not win the election, but that's the purpose of contested elections. You have to fight for it. It was a good fight, and I respect her for doing it. Gloria is settling in well. And it's a matter of just getting people who understand how education works and that this isn't a part-time job. It may be part-time as in hours, but the work outside it is never part-time. The best and most thing that I was proud of on our board was how we responded in November. We had a public charter school. This was noted in the Isthmus that had a policy. They sent a letter to the board asking that no disabled student be placed in their school because that the disabled were a burden to the educational system. This both Jen and the board reacted almost immediately and basically stated this is not how we're going to run this district, that everyone has a right to educate. And I hope we continue to do things like that.
Tell me about this Montessori school.
Yes, the Montessori, I've heard a lot. I've been told that I hate Montessori. I don't. I went there for 2 years. Here's the thing. My problem with the Montessori program, and I will say it again, was not Montessori education. It never was. It was the lack of staffing and the fact that special ed could be cut up to 50% if need be. This is a problem. They didn't have the staff to provide the needs for every student. If you're going to provide education at MMSD, you need to provide it for all. And I felt that they just couldn't do it with those staffing levels. And we explained that to them. It's not we didn't want a charter school, an instrumentality charter. What we wanted was one that was the best instrumentality charter we could get. And the problem being is with those staffing levels, they couldn't provide it, and we couldn't take it on slot. We just couldn't. That would have been too much. And so, very simply, they chose to go the public route through the charters are. They are considered a public school through the charters are. They are their own LEA. I wish them the best of luck. I'm sorry it couldn't work out, but there are certain things that the board said we cannot compromise on, and our goal is to educate every single student, and sometimes that's not always the case. And Montessori tried their best and did it. It's just we're a large district, Sly. We have 51 schools. We have over 27,000 students. Trying to be that inclusive for everyone, especially at a small charter, is incredibly difficult. I think if they would have gone the grow your own method and done it year by year, I think it could have been much more successful, but I do wish them luck.
Over the weekend, the governor said that, in fact, he said this on the Mike Goucher Upfront program, that he might look at breaking up the Milwaukee School District.
I found that horrific and terrifying. Very simply, government should not, higher government, which doesn't have experience in education, has no right to go and break up schools to win and affect teachers' jobs, to affect union jobs, to affect those who really truly care about our students and say, see, look, we're doing something. We're not. That's unacceptable. And that just makes me want to even more say this governor currently isn't caring as much as he could on public education. And I'm sorry, we can't break up the public schools. And what, replace them with the charter schools? As in voucher, not charter. I said that wrong. I would like to be corrected. Replace it with voucher schools that we don't know will work? That's not going to work. We need strong public schools, not controlled or destroyed by the governor's office.
Don't you find it interesting that he said this after Milwaukee teachers are beginning to stand up and demonstrate their commitment not only to decent wages for themselves, but decent working conditions and transportation for their students?
I believe it's not coincidental at all. In fact, it surely sounds like retribution to me. But as I said, we lawyers don't like coincidences very much.
It seems to be a common theme on this program. So you've seen teachers all over the country now standing up, and we're just learning of the horrific conditions. Yeah. Teachers all over the country teaching where they literally don't have enough textbooks for their kids.
They're Oklahoma books.
They don't have enough money to feed their families. There's been an uprising all over the country, finally, and yet here in Wisconsin, because we don't have a budget right now, you know, we're not in a budget fight right now. What the Republicans have done to education is sort of being masked over by the fact that the governor put some money back into public education. Do you think people are going to be fooled by that?
I hope people are not fooled by that, Fry. I really do. I hope people are not fooled, because you can't gut education, which is what Act 10 did. It gutted public education. You can't do that and then that gives somebody back, they see a funding education. No, that's a campaign promise. That's not a sustainable way of funding education. Our teachers, after Act 10, our teachers have been under constant attack. And I'm looking around the country, and it's happening everywhere. I'm seeing the teachers in Oklahoma with the books, which are falling apart, West Virginia, where they don't have enough to provide for the students. And I'm going, this is unacceptable. Since when are our teachers, the ones who are helping our children, our most precious asset, considered the bad guy?
Final question. It sure seems as though in the school board race this year, school security was the primary issue. There were a number of issues, but primary issues. Do you think that we have come to a conclusion on the proper role of police within the school buildings? Are you happy with the district's policy on school safety, both from outward, you know, obviously what happened at Parkland was an issue. Horrible. The other day we had a door propped open at a school that created quite a bit of furor. But then also safety within the school building with students, some that are misbehaving in the halls.
Very simply, security is always going to be an issue for me. I'd like to see the ERO report before I could totally say if I'm happy or not with the EROs. But the one thing I would like to see is more training on the issue of disability. I don't think we do enough. I've spoken some with Joe Ballas on it, and I look forward. That's part of the what I look forward to, especially working with Gloria Reyes with her background in law enforcement on that, because they have more knowledge than I do in the area. As for the security in the building, the door propping open speaks more to our lack of heating and air conditioning issues, which are a problem to the school, than I think it does to security. I really do. That's my opinion. Again, I may get some heat for it, but that's my honest opinion.
Final question. Right before the election this spring, Jen Cheatham released a statement saying that she was concerned that there are a lot of teachers that are afraid to discipline minority students. What did you make of that statement?
I think that quote, very simply, expresses a lot of minority teachers took that as offense, and I think they should. It's a quote that can be taken many ways. The way I took it was that we don't want to look like we're a racist district. However, how could it be taken the other way that, oh, see, we're just giving the minorities the pass? I could see how that could be offensive. To me, at the first read of going, well, that's really harsh, then I'm looking at it more as an intellectual and going, no, I could see that we're an optics culture. We're what's in the newspaper. We're what's in the media. And oftentimes, we have teachers who are going, am I going to be vilified for this? Am I going to have my career cost for this? And I think those are the issues we need to talk about, not only as a board, but as a district, and how we create a policy for everyone.
You know, it's that's really tough to talk about those things. Everybody says we need to discuss this, but then
it's the hardest thing.
Yeah, but people feel inhibited, and people feel defensive.
They're scared.
Yeah, right.
Well, we are in a culture where we're a soundbite culture. Race isn't a soundbite. It takes a lot longer. It takes to have a meaningful discussion on that issue. And certain things can't be just put into a soundbite world. And you asked one other question I'd like to answer, if that's okay.
Sure.
And that would be on the discipline in schools. We talked a lot about the internal door locks, and we need to look into that as security, but at the same point, I want to be careful because I don't want to create a system that's so secure that students can't get out in case there's an emergency. Or if they're bullied, that they can't hear if someone's calling for help. I was one of those students. I had a restraining order to attend middle school because of extreme bullying, because people tried to throw me down a flight of stairs.
that door is sealed or that door is locked internally and I can't get out, no one's going to hear me.
Interesting. All right.
And that worries me.
Nikki, keep us up to date on the situation with the school board. We really look forward to hearing more about this.
Thank you so much, Ryan. Thanks for your support for the Madison Public Schools.
Nikki Vanderbilt, Madison School District, obviously Madison School Board, with us at SlysOffice.com.
SlysOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, five more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.